Our eyes are not set on the here and now. Our eyes are set in the world to come. We are travelers. We are sojourners in this earthly realm, and this is not our final destination.
Welcome to this week's Fox and Father. Now, look, I don't want you to be shocked. Calvin Robinson is not in jail in Soviet Russia, but it's still Fox and Father with me, the Fox, and him,
the Father.
And Calvin has very selfishly decided to go and minister to people as part of his duties as a priest. And I am stuck in the house crying because I'm not with my spiritual advisor. Anyway, for you who have not watched this before, it's a show where Calvin tries to tutor me in the ways of righteousness with varying degrees of success. And we usually swap envelopes. I choose a story, I give one to Calvin, and they've got puppies going mad over there. I give Calvin an envelope with a story that I want him to talk about. He gives me one that I want to talk about, and then we have a third one. But we're going to try something different this week and just have a conversation instead, because a lot's happened.
Well, so, how are you, first and foremost?
I am okay. I took the kids away for half term. We went to a place with a swimming pool. So I basically spend my entire life nowadays looking for places where there isn't internet, or where I can lie to my children and say, oh, the internet doesn't work here and stuff like that on half term, because I'm just so desperate to try and have times which aren't involving staring deeply into a screen and sharing TikToks with each other. So that was successful. And yeah, I went, and you know, kids are getting older, they've got various different views on stuff. But I saw a fox and a deer drinking next to each other from a trough in the field. And the house we were staying in belonged to David Hemmings, the actor, which I didn't know until my family, or the members of my family that still speak to me and don't think I'm Adolf Hitler, turned up and had a barbecue lunch to belatedly celebrate my birthday. And my brother-in-law, Richard, walked in and went, is this guy a big David Hemmings fan who owns this house? David Hemmings being a famous actor. And I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, I think this might have been David Hemmings' house. So we ended up in one of David Hemmings' wife's houses. She'd recently passed away. There was a swimming pool. There was an organic hot tub that was heated by... you put logs from a fire into like a little wood burner, and it heated up a pool of water. That's cool. No, very limited internet, and hence why we couldn't record. And I'm back home now, and the puppies, as you can see, are like that. And I feel good. I spoke to Frederick Forsyth, the writer, this morning. He of Dave the Jackal, who employed my uncle. And I think it's safe to say he's one of us.
Okay, good to hear. Well, I don't think I've seen you since your birthday, so happy birthday, first and foremost. I'm glad you were with your family. That's lovely. I feel like on the electronic device issue, it'd be nice if we could have like a little box that we could put in our homes and just turn it on, like an EMP, so all electronic devices go off for an hour or two per day. I think that would be nice for families to just shut down and disconnect.
You can do it, but the problem is, you know what's going to happen is you're going to go and be the one that turns it off. That's going to be the problem. You're going to be like, oh no, I just need to do this one thing and then I'll turn it back off. And it's, I think we're trapped in an internet cage. And
we just have to be more disciplined, right?
Are you talking to me about self-discipline, Calvin? We've started already. All right, I agree with you. We need an EMP box invented, the Calvin Robinson EMP box. Let's patent that now.
We've got to make it easier for people to discipline themselves, because we know something to be good, but we don't follow through with it because everything else is so convenient.
But are you disciplined in your own? You are, actually. You give up stuff for Lent and stuff, don't you? You give up
I try to be disciplined, but none of us are entirely disciplined. We have to constantly keep at it, don't we? But we've got to make it easier for ourselves to be disciplined. So we've got to put ourselves in the right spaces and the right mindsets to do it.
Okay, well, before you tell us how we do that, can you tell me how you are and where you are and what you're doing and why you're not sat opposite me in the studio as my remaining friend in the world?
Because Theon has left, and I refuse to go back to that studio until we get Theon back in there.
Well, we've got blessing now.
Okay.
Theon's got loads of children to minister to, where it turns out. So
Well, I am good. I'm in Texas right now. I was in Dallas at an Anglican, well, a couple of Anglican conferences, but the day I got out here, there was this massive thunderstorm. I don't know if it's a tornado or whatever they have, but all the trees were down, the electricity was out, it was crazy. I woke up at like 5:30 to just gale and all kinds of stuff. But I'm sat there at 6 o'clock in the morning reading my morning prayers, and the window's open. I could see the lightning, and I could just hear the thunder. It was actually a good reminder of God's creation. I quite liked it. It was like he was talking back to the prayers. It was quite nice. But I did Forward in Faith Conference, Anglican Way Institute Conference, and now I'm in Arlington, Texas, at the Colson Center National Conference. So I spoke there last night. Now I'm speaking here again tomorrow as well. And I might be doing a little bit of a podcast with someone on the Catholic Square later today. But it's good. I love it out here. This is the old stadium behind me. I say old, it's perfectly fine, but they just built another one down the road. But it's in places like this, it's an interesting reminder of who the gods are, right? Because in London, in Europe, we look around, we see churches, cathedrals everywhere, a reminder of who the gods were. And out here, it's like sports center there, new sports center there, even newer sports center there, like perhaps pointing that we have the wrong gods these days.
I'm going to find this quote that reminds me of that. They just built a new stadium. So my friend Larry, who was my host, I don't know whether I read this to you. He sent me this thing, this description of America, which I think is really interesting. And it goes like this. It's a description, and I think it's one of the best bits of writing from a really sort of, a nothing novelist. America is about appetites, I told her, and I love that. There are many European jokes carping at the American tendency to have the biggest, the best, the most extraordinary this or that, but I don't mind. In fact, I find it endearing, and I think the Europeans who make these jokes miss the point of America. Oh, hang on, it's no, it's oh yeah. Miss the point of America. The thing to understand about the country is that although it is full of Europeans, there are in many ways ex-Europeans who want to be non-Europeans or even anti-Europeans. After all, most of them left Europe for a reason. They want to keep America separate from Europe in all sorts of ways. Since, by definition, they can't honor the past in America, it makes very good sense for them to dwell on the present and the future. Hence the biggest this, the most expensive that, and so forth. So if I may, I'll be very American and not answer your question, but I'll tell you what I want to tell you about America. You're going to hate this, but I love the waste.
Oh, that's a very worldly answer.
Yeah, but wait, go, but here it is. Go to an ordinary restaurant in America, a coffee shop, I mean, not a fancy place, and order any dish, and it will arrive garnished with all sorts of things, bread, lettuce, pickled potatoes, things that you didn't order. It is as much you can do to finish your meal and clear your plate. Buy any car in Europe, unless you're a millionaire, and you will get a cramped metal box with every accessory designed to save space and cost to avoid excess. In America, the car will be twice as long as the engineering warrants, and there will be far more room than you need. Instead of being designed to save money and space, the car is there to spoil you, to provide the maximum pleasure possible. The car says to you, everyone can have luxuries. There's enough to go around and plenty left over. The car in America is not just a different machine, it's a different attitude. And it's the same with the roads, the beaches, the beds, the building. They're all bigger, longer, and above all, more generous. Is that worldly?
Yeah, absolutely. It's spot on. And obviously we're tempted by these bigger cars and a bit bigger this, bigger and better that. Of course we are, because we want worldly goods. We want desire, pleasure, luxury, but it's all the wrong obsession. I love America. I love America, but when I look around here, I think this is a place that was designed after Christianity. Like, it's everything from the grid structure, like how is the most pragmatic? How can we build a society where we can get from A to B in a car? Like, obviously, it's a place that's built around the car. Whereas you're looking the old world, you look to European continent or to Britain, everything's focused around the parish. Like the church used to be at least the biggest building in every parish, and everything around it was built to kind of look up to that. So we had a society that was built around God. Of course, we've lost that in recent years as steel and glass and concrete take over. But I don't think America as a continent ever had that, or North America never had that. And it's a shame because I love this place and it's lacking that ancient beauty.
Do you think, though, that there's something about that desire to, because America is a much more, I mean, correct me if you're, you know America better than I do. You've traveled all over the flyover states, as they call them, meeting people and spending time with Christians. Do you not sense that America is much more connected to God than, say, the UK or Europe is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I often say that we in the old world have the style, but not the substance. So we've got these old ancient buildings. They're beautiful, but we've forgotten what they're for. So we lack the sound teaching. We lack the faith. And in America, they don't have the style, but they've got the substance. They've still got the faith and they're hanging on to it, which is why I'm often out here to get recharged. But the truth is somewhere in the middle. Like this great big building behind me may be a great big building, but it's not focused on God. It's not designed to remind us of someone greater. It's not awesome in the literal sense of the word. That reminds us of whoever designed it. The glory of that building is the architect. Whereas in the ancient world of England and Europe, the architects would never see their building come to fruition because they designed them so big and so awesome in the literal sense of the word because they were focused on glorifying God and not themselves. In fact, during most of the pre-Renaissance period, all of these big buildings were designed without any signature. The artists would never sign their work because it wasn't about them. And we flipped that all around and now it's all about us. And it's a shame.
That's quite interesting that you raised the point that the people that designed the cathedrals that were going to take a few hundred years to build were not going to live to see the completion of their building. So that must have taken... That maybe that's why there is so much wonder in those fantastic old buildings, because they were absolutely guaranteed not to witness their final iteration. Do you think that's...
Yeah, right? We could take a lesson from that. Like, we're fighting a culture war right now. We're fighting for the very soul of our nation. But we've got to remind ourselves that we may never see the fruits of those works. So we're spreading seeds. We're trying to encourage people to fight back against globalism, against secularism, against Mohammedanism, and to put Christ back into Christendom. But we've got to realize that we may die before that happens, before England becomes sound again. It may get worse before it gets better, but we've still got to put that work in.
And it actually gives your life meaning, because if you're not guaranteed a reward other than salvation, then your rewards are not going to be sought on earth, are they not? And I think probably one of the main problems of earth at the moment is people are seeking the reward immediately in the day, in the moment that they live. And I wonder if that's what separates it out. Someone said to me the other day, or today actually, they said we're writing a press release because we're about to announce something. Actually, by the time this goes out, it will get announced so we can talk about it. I'll tell you about it and you can tell me whether you think it's a good idea or not. And they said, you need to take out the words left and right from your press release because that's their language, not ours. Okay. They invented the term left and right, not us. Anyway, can I tell you about this thing that we're doing?
Yeah, go on.
So, as you know, with our mutual love of the insurgent political party reform, I've been going, it's coming up to general election, we have a political party, what should we do? What contribution can we make to this general election? So I thought I would write down 4 points, which would be a conservative commitment to culture. And it was spawned by having a load of Tory MPs on the phone to me going, I don't have any money. Please, can you send me some money? Because a snap election has been called and, they're allowed to spend, I don't know what limit is. I think it's something like 15, between 15 and 30 grand. Anyway, I think it's 15 actually. And none of them have any money. They've got no time to do fundraising dinners. They've got no time to do this. And they're sound Tory MPs. Tory MPs that I like. And they have to remain nameless at the moment because I...
Yeah, fair enough.
decided whether they're, you know, whether it's all signed on. So I said, I tell you what, I'll give you £5,000 each if you sign up to a conservative commitment to culture. Here are the four things. So it says, I am pleased to support the commitments below and I will campaign on them in the forthcoming general election and in the next parliament if elected. One, to leave the European Court of Human Rights, cap immigration and ensure sovereign control of our borders. Two, to repeal the Human Rights Act to and in, therefore ensure free speech for all. Three, to ban all forms of gender reassignment for children and defend childhood and the family. Four, to reform the Equality Act and end sex and race-based discrimination. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think the idea is sound, getting conservative politicians to sign on to some kind of pledge in order to receive funding. That's a good idea. The pledges themselves are tricky. I think that probably there's too many of them and they could be weaseled out of. I think it might be nice to have something that's clear, like one, two, three, bum, 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 you know, cut immigration, blah, 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 blah. But the ones I worry about are the ones that the Conservatives have been saying for a long time, and I don't know what their agenda is. So to leave the ECHR is a good one. It makes sense because when we hear we can't deport foreign criminals because of the immigration lawyers and they're using the ECHR as a weapon, it makes sense from that perspective. And the Conservatives keep telling us it's the immigration lawyers, that's the reason we can't send people out when they enter the country illegally. But then I say, well, what is it about our laws that we can change or our approach to European laws that we can change? Because if we remove the ECHR, we remove a lot of our protections. And if we're relying on a conservative government to put those protections back in with an English Bill of Rights or whatever, I don't trust our politicians. I don't trust our government to put something in better. So I think we'll probably come out of it worse. And they'll say it's to solve this problem, but actually it will create another problem. I just don't trust our system to solve our problems. I don't trust our politicians. I need it to be very, very clear cut, and I need to understand all the consequences of the action first and foremost.
Well, so I've made it as simple as I can. The problem with some of this stuff and the Human Rights Act and stuff like that, which is has you know, you've got Article 10.1, which says everyone has a right to free speech, and it's great, brilliant. And then you get Article 10.2, which says except if we don't like what you're saying. So you go, we'll repeal that. It can get very, very legalistic and very, very complicated. What I think I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say, I don't want to stand candidates against sound Tories. Like Andrea Jenkins is a sound Tory, right? She's got a reform candidate standing against her. It's neck and neck between her and Labour. We don't want a Labour MP in Morley. We don't. We don't. We don't want a Labour MP in Morley, do we? So I'm sort of trying to say, you know, if £5,000 is going to help her, you know, get out there and campaign and do the things she needs to do, I think that's really, really helpful. And I'm trying to say to them, the culture matters. Every policy platform that is brought up by Reform, whoever, Labour, as you say, we're in a culture war. We've got to get the Conservatives to engage with the cultural issue, as we've seen. But you know, like you're saying, I mean, look, we should probably talk about the Trump thing. Because we're looking at, you know, you're in America at the moment. I'd be really interested to know what it happened yesterday. So we're not going to lie to our audience that we're speaking this week. So what's been the reaction to the weaponization of the legal system in America, and what the conversations you've been having about it?
That's a good question. So, the news was announced last night, and I was in a hotel lobby, and everyone just said, "Let's go to the bar. Let's go and have a drink," because everyone was kind of in a state of shock, especially the Americans, that this has actually happened, that the political system is being used against a political opponent. It is like banana court, kangaroo court kind of stuff. It is tyrannous, and it is what we'd expect from the East, not what we'd expect from the so-called liberal democracies of the West. And even people that aren't necessarily Trump supporters or Trump voters are saying, what is going on here? This clearly political persecution. But I don't get it, because to me it's dumb. The Democrats are making a martyr of Trump and making sure that he's going to get more votes. He's going to win. And the practicalities of it don't make sense. He's obviously not going to go to jail, is he? And or are they going to send the president to jail and what, put a Secret Service in there with him? And it sounds like a sitcom. So what is their agenda? And on the other end, you've got liberals coming out in New York saying, yeah, we all do this. This is how we operate. This is how business works. It wasn't a law that was broken. It was just procedure that was broken. But we all do this. So if you're going to punish him, you're punishing all of us. This is how badly they want him. They want to persecute him because they do not want him to run. They know they'll have to rig the election again if he does.
Yeah, and I think that we'll probably get a strike from YouTube for saying rig the election again. But, you know, at this point, I'm like, it is so difficult to understand because the guy is being convicted on all charges in a district where he had 5% support by a leftist Soros-funded judge. And he could very well face prison, actually, I'd imagine. I think the judge, but from all of my understanding of the cases and looking at it, the judge wants the guy in prison. So people who imprison their political opponents are Putin, are Pol Pot, are Hitler, these people are the most extreme form of totalitarianism that you ever witness. And Trump, whether you like him or not, is, as you say, he's been martyred now, but the precedent has been set. Yeah. So does it mean, and I've played Hunter Biden in a film, and I've read what the Biden family have got up to. I know what the Biden family are. They're a crime family. That's what they are. They're a mafia crime family. So now the precedent has been set that you can imprison your political opponents, essentially, you know, charge them. It looks to me like there's no way out of this, because if they don't get Trump, Trump is going to have to get Biden, because Biden has actually done a lot of stuff. There are a lot of shell companies with 10% going to the big guy. He's been in Congress for his entire career on not the world's biggest salary, and he's worth tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, so, where does that come from?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we know where 10% for the big guy is, where a lot of that. So what are the, you go.
Yeah, you're right. That's all corrupt, and that's part of the problem. But even bigger than that, I think what they're doing now is undermining our trust in the democratic process. And if we have no trust in the process, if there's no confidence in democracy, then there's no democracy. And this has been going on for years now. You know, Hillary Clinton was the first one to say the election was rigged. It wasn't Donald Trump. But then in the next election, Donald Trump says the election was rigged. And then the Democrats, he's undermining democracy by saying that the election was rigged. Like, you guys started that dialogue. And now every year we hear, every election we hear, the election was rigged in the States. So people are starting to not trust the process. At the same time, back home in England, we had the biggest electoral mandate in living memory with the EU referendum. Yet both sides of the Houses of Parliament did not want to push it through. And so we're losing our trust in the democratic process. At the same time, we vote for a party with a manifesto pledge that says we're going to cut control or cap immigration, and immigration skyrockets under their tenure. You know, everything they put in their manifesto either gets ignored or the opposite happens. So if we can't vote for people based on a manifesto, if we can't vote thinking a referendum will get pushed through if we vote for it, or manifesto pledges will get put through, or on this end of the spectrum, whoever we vote for, the opposition is going to rig it anyway, then what's the point in voting? And we're all becoming disenfranchised. So democracy is crumbling. They're undermining it.
What does the Bible say about, because I've basically come to the conclusion that all systems are corrupt. Like the minute a man makes a system, it's immediately corrupted. So I have no faith in the police. I have no faith in the judiciary. I have no faith in the parliamentary process. Like, there's nothing that I actually have any faith in anymore, particularly, because I feel that systems are inherently corrupted. Once they're created, they're corrupted immediately. What does the Bible say about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So democracy is not a biblical political system at all. It's the problem there is that we've made an idol of democracy, especially out here. You know, everyone holds up democracy as the pinnacle, but actually democracy is probably just one of the least worst options that we've had in modern history. It's certainly not from the scriptures. The scriptures show us that a human political system is centered around a king. Since King David, that's been the way we've been supposed to be governed, through the divine right of kings, because we requested it. God said, you don't need an earthly king. And we said, well, we do. And so he gave us one. And since then, we've had the divine right of kings, in which the king is accountable to God and to the people. And the king's authority comes from God. No one on this earth has authority that God hasn't given them, which is what Christ said to Pontius Pilate. You know, you don't have authority over me that my father hasn't given you. And We had that with our queen, our great late great Queen Elizabeth II, who said that I am here to serve my people, I'm here to serve God, but God holds me to account. And once they have that idea of someone bigger than them, someone greater than them, that can hold them accountable, then the hope is that they'll at least be putting the people first. The problem is when you have a king that isn't religious, that doesn't put God first, that they're going to become a tyrant. But is it better to have a bad king than a failing democracy?
Well, it's interesting because I think that I've been saying this to the people that fund me and the people that advise me, that we live in periods, don't we? So yeah. As you quite rightly pointed out, we had a really amazing queen, and she was definitely positioned herself and acted like a servant. She was a servant to her people. King Charles is more of a spokesperson, to get the woke language right. I didn't gender him. He's more of a spokesperson for his people, and he says, my people believe that climate change is, you know, a major issue, my people believe this, my people believe that. It's very difficult, but it comes back to the question of how does one stop these, that we always talk about, how does one stop these terrible ideas taking over our societies, because we're defenseless against it. You know, as you're seeing in America with what's happening with Trump, we're defenseless to stop it without something rigorous. You know, where are the people saying there is a higher authority than you to corrupt judges, to corrupt politicians, to people that write manifestos that make no sense? What is our way of giving muscularity back to faith to make sure that we're okay, or do we just have to ride out these storms?
I don't think we do. I don't think we have much of an option. And the Americans do. They've got their First and their Second Amendment, right? So they've got their free speech and they've got their guns. And if Trump goes to jail, I imagine there'll be people on the streets with a Bible in one hand and a gun in the other and saying, this is wrong and we're trying to reclaim what's right. But in England, I don't think we have any of that. We don't have the courage for that either. We don't have that spirit. So I suppose we're just going to roll over and let it all happen to us.
I get a very strong sense from what they call the left. I know we had this earlier. I get a very strong sense that they want violence. They're trying to goad those God, guns and Bibles crowd into some sort of armed insurrection. But it seems to me what happened yesterday was an insurrection, not what has happened.
Well, it doesn't mean... If one doesn't happen, they can frame one, right? January the 6th, they can invite people in and just paint it as an insurrection and block people away. People are still in jail from January the 6th. It's ridiculous. So they can do what they like. They can frame it however they like anyway. We need, I don't know, do we need to have bigger voices? Do we need to somehow get rid of the elite? We need to drain the swamp, but how do we do that?
Well, speaking of draining the swamp, tomorrow, I mean, by the time this is aired, I also want to ask you about premonitions and whether you should listen to them. So I've had a very, very bad premonition about how this all ends. Certainly in the UK, and personally, I have this recurring dream that I'm attacked by one of these people in London, and I know exactly where it happens. I don't want to say in case someone finds me, but I know exactly what I'm wearing. Someone asks me for a lighter, I hand out with my left hand, I hand them a lighter, and I'm stabbed under the armpit. It's a recurring dream. Tomorrow in London, we're going to stand up for free speech. I'm going to talk on free speech. Mayatuzzi is going to talk about, you've made a video, I understand. Mayatuzzi is going to talk about what happens if you import a different culture into your own culture. And Carl Benjamin is going to talk, you know, because he's done a philosophy degree and he's a smart dude. He's going to talk about what the next steps are as to how we can, as you say, reclaim things. And I think, and Tommy obviously is going to show his film, his two-tier policing film, which the police, by the way, have insisted on watching, and he's told them to do one. And we're going to hold a festival, essentially, of free speech and you know, the right of people to come out and say, you know, we are allowed to talk and we want all this stuff. So I think that's the closest we're going to get to it, which is a grassroots, people bottom up, people-led movement. And I don't think politics is the answer to that problem. But I've got a feeling that police are going to come down on us like a ton of bricks tomorrow. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm absolutely gutted that I can't be there in person because I'm obviously across the channel, across the ocean. But in my video, I'm saying the answer is to return to church. The answer is to go back to church. We've been persuaded for the past few decades that we can be a liberal, progressive society, a secular society where people can be Christian, but people will be other faiths too. We have no predominant culture. We have no predominant faith. And that's led us into the mess that we're in. We need to reclaim England for Christ, saying that we are a Christian nation. And to do that isn't just saying, no, we're a Christian country. It's to actually go to church and be Christian. We have to make a choice. Either we're Christian or we're going to be taken over by Mohammedans. That is the binary choice. And the liberals will say, well, no, of course, you can have both. And you can't have both. One is a conquering faith and one protects the truth. And so we have to go with the one that is true. And we've seen what happens when you remove Christianity. They put wokeness in its place. But wokeness does not survive. Woke dies. It eats itself. It's an Ouroboros. And so what's left behind when woke is dead is that void. And nature abhors a vacuum. The void gets filled with Mohammedanism. And then we become predominantly Mohammedan. So the choice is ours. Either we go to church, we become Christians, we have faith in God, or we give the country over to Mohammed.
Do you think then that there should be a strong spiritual element, Christian spiritual element to tomorrow's event? That there should be a prayer that should lead it off, that to ask God to be with people at that situation, because that'd be quite good.
Yeah, 100%.
You could ping me one over. I'll read it out because I don't want any ruckus with the cops. I know that they're building up to, you know, I'm part of all of how it's all getting organized, and I can see the pressure they're already putting on. And also there is an Islamic, very short ordered Islamic demonstration at exactly the same time. So we remember Remembrance Sunday when the end of Whitehall was cordoned off because they wanted to march down Whitehall past the cenotaph on Remembrance Sunday to denigrate our history and our culture. And men that were men of faith, or not, but at least they came from a culture that was built of faith, and we as a nation value the sacrifice that they made. There has now been an approved demonstration taking place from Downing Street, so we're talking less than 200 meters from where we're going. And what will happen is there will be, I'm worried that there will be conflict, and I think that within our crowd, whether that is from, you know, just people with ill will, which you find in every crowd, or whether planted into our crowd, there will be a cohort of people that want to create some news headlines. Shall we put it that?
This is the problem. So the news headlines are going to be what they are anyway. So they're going to paint these Mohammedan protesters as peaceful. They're going to paint you guys as far-right thugs. And they're going to look for opportunities, and if they don't get any opportunities, they're going to make opportunities to paint that. I was down there on Remembrance Sunday. I remember how they kettle all the Englishmen, they kettle the patriots, and then they goad them and they try to get a reaction. But from the Mohammedans, they just let them get on there with their, you know, yelling death to Jews or whatever it is that they're yelling. That's fine. And so you're going to have a lot of that. It's going to take the people coming, the patriots coming out on the 1st of June, are going to have to be extra vigilant and peaceful, and just let the police push them, let the police goad them, and just not take the bait. Hopefully there won't be much alcohol, and hopefully people will be rooted in prayer, but any little incident is going to get blown up in the media, and the media are waiting for it.
They can't wait for it. But I think that's why it's wise to have this idea that it's more of a festival. So there's music there, there's going to be, you know, it's much less going to be chanting and marching, all of that sort of stuff. It's a short walk, march down to Parliament Square. I listened to the police today say, you know, it's unprecedented that you'll show a movie about how terrible we are at our job in Parliament Square for an hour and a half. But the rejuvenation of Tommy is interesting, isn't it? You know, well, I really think he's managed to never give up on what he was trying to do in the first place. And I see a sort of rehabilitation of him via the medium of this idea of free speech, which means that while you listen to Tommy, you may disagree with him hugely, which, you know, a lot of people do. And then you may disagree with Don Lemon, or Don Lemon, who's sitting there going, convicted criminal, you know, which is what the American left will say. But I have a feeling it will kick off, and I really hope and pray that it doesn't. So you're going to have to, when your 5 o'clock thunderstorm comes, you will hopefully throw out some words for everyone there, because I think they're good people. I really do. And I bought the Tommy Robinson rubbish. I'm the first to admit it. And I want it to be a show of the people that we are dissatisfied. We're not happy. The Tories, no one is wanting to vote Conservative. No one really wants to vote Labour, to be honest. But I would love it to be a demonstration of people saying, we are the people you need to appeal to for us to vote for you, rather than, you know, insurgent political parties that are going to get stymied by the first past the post system. Do you know what I mean? Did you see?
I think Tommy's a good lad, and I think what he's done is great. He's got everyone together. You, Carl Benjamin, Katie Hopkins. I'm recording a video. I'd be there if I could, but it's not about us. The thing is, it's about all the people that either we represent or that will be there with us. That's the thing. It's all about the British people, the English people. And that's what the politicians forget when they get on their soapbox. They are just representing themselves. They've become about their own personal interests. But the British people and the English people are all fed up of all of that. And now we're giving them a voice. We're giving them a platform. And so what comes from that, we don't even know. We can't predict it. It's just going to be, here you go, make your voices heard. And the silent majority will no longer be silent.
I think you're right. And I think that the plan is to hold this one, to start with this one, and then to do another on the 28th of July, where we're going to, obviously after the thing, we're going to live stream a discussion across all our platforms where we discuss what we think this movement wants to look like, what it needs to achieve. I think the most important thing, obviously, in all good movements is people that don't seek power over other people. I think it's one of the main things that one worries about. Did you see the attack in Germany and the
BBC? Oh yeah.
Thoughts?
I haven't seen the BBC's coverage of it, but I saw the attack, and I saw the anti-Mohammedan chap got the police jumped on him, and then the Mohammedan comes and stabs the police. I'm like,
not according to the BBC, Cal. According to the BBC, the far-right extremist headbutted the Mohammedan's sacred knife, ceremonial knife, repeatedly in an unprovoked attack. I mean, at what point does the clown world end? Someone said to me that in the Bible, and tell me this because I don't know the Bible as well as you do, that the signs of the end times are worship of nature, which is environmentalism, worship of animals and all of that sort of stuff. The end of the meaning of words. And what was the last one? I can't remember the last one. But it seems like we are facing this stuff down right now. Are we not? Or are we?
We are. There are many signs of the end times. But the point is that just because we see those signs doesn't mean we're in the end times. But we know that those things will be in the end times. And I think we often fall into the trap. It's quite egotistical and quite narcissistic of us to think we are living through the end times. But actually, I think times have been a lot worse than they are right now. And times will get a lot worse still than they are right now. But the message of the Bible is to be prepared for the end times. So it could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be 100 years from now. It doesn't matter, because Christ will come like a thief in the night. We've always got to be prepared for judgment day, but we can't expect it, as in we can't suddenly say, this is it, we are it, because I think that's too much about us.
So you know when it says the fear of God, is that what that means?
Absolutely. The fear of God is the fear of judgment. Be ready, because if Jesus Christ appeared to you right now, whether that's because you died or because he came in the second coming and said, this is judgment day. If he appeared to you right now and says, what have you done for your salvation? Like, what would your answer be?
Well, I was told, and I don't know if this is true, so you can tell me. Also, by the way, I haven't sworn yet, so I'm just going to say fuck once.
Oh, no, don't. You're doing so well.
Someone was saying to me that when you go to your when you meet your maker, and if you imagine it as a courtroom, You are pitted. You're pitted against your conscience. It's your conscience that you stand against, the times that you knew you should have done something but you didn't. And your conscience is permanent, isn't it? There must be a million things that you regret, I regret, we all regret. Do you think that's has
That's a nice
validity?
idea. I don't know if it's necessarily a Christian idea, because that makes us the judges of ourselves. Again, that's a bit worldly and a bit pagan for my liking. Jesus
God
Christ.
engaged your, but God, instead of God going, I'm going to judge you, he goes, let your conscience judge you.
No, Jesus Christ is our judge. He is our only judge. We don't judge ourselves, our consciences don't judge ourselves. And actually, the point of a Christian is our conscience should be cleared. So, because we repent of our sins, and once we've repented, we are forgiven. Therefore, we should not be holding on to that guilt anyway. So, it wouldn't make much sense for us to be pitting against our conscience, because our conscience should be cleared on Judgment Day.
Is your conscience going to be clear? Mine's not. I've done some horrible things in my life, and I'm hopeful
Then
about
go to
them.
confession, repent of them, receive absolution and penance, and then you're good.
I can deal with the confession part of it. I just can't deal with the Pope, dude.
You don't need to deal with the Pope, dude, but you just need to go to confession and repent of your sins, receive penance and absolution, and trust in God to have absolved you of your sins.
I do trust in God. I definitely do trust in God, totally and entirely. So I don't have, I'm not in the position of going that, as we were talking last, well, on our missed week, we were talking about the Jordan Peterson thing. I like this idea of complexification as well, because I watched another clip of this guy saying, it was quite an interesting clip actually, and he puts it in front of Jordan Peterson and says, do you believe that Jesus died and was resurrected 3 days later? And Jordan's like, I don't know what that means. And the guy says, okay, so if there was a video camera in front of the tomb and they take in a dead body and it comes out 3 days later, would you believe it? And he sort of tries to get out of the difficulty, because there's this human desire. We all have this real desire to turn a very simple thing into a metaphorical thing and then apply the metaphorical to ourselves. So maybe I think I'm just being I'm talking to myself at this point, but like, if, yeah, maybe you're right, maybe you just go to church and you got to confess. You'll get me there one day, won't you?
This is the this.
I
If
was
there's
taught.
one thing that we can all do as Christians to change the world, is go to church.
Yeah.
It's so simple, because we can't be Christians by ourselves. We can't rely on our own intelligence, our own intellect to interpret the Bible, but we also have to be in communion with each other, in communion with God. He said, "Take, eat. This is my body. Do this in remembrance of me." So we're supposed to do it. We're supposed to eat his body in remembrance of him. And we have to do that together. We go together in praise and worship of him. We give our sacrifice of thanksgiving to him, and we partake in his perpetual sacrifice for us. All of it requires us to be with each other and with him in his house.
Okay, but get off the fence there, Cal.
And one day I'll make up my mind on what I believe, but it changes us. It changes, or it should change us. It should change our very essence, the way we are. It should, when we're baptized, it leaves an indelible mark on our souls. And if we are living through that baptism, we should be different people to how we were before that baptism. And so, as Christ in his judgment will say, "What have you done with your salvation?" He will ask the question, "What have you done with your baptism?"
Well, if it makes it really okay, so if it makes it why then, when you have, you hear great stories of Christians going, I've had the, I'm completely transformed, but you also hear a lot of stories from Christians going, it's been a permanent suffering for me. Why then would life be suffering? Because earth is the dominion of the devil, or what?
Because suffering is part of the human experience, and
Should we be grateful for?
we should absolutely be grateful for suffering, yeah, as weird as it sounds. If we want to get into heaven, we've got to be sanctified, right? We can't just go as we are. We have to become better. We're always striving towards holiness, and suffering is part of that purification process. Suffering helps us get from where we are to where we need to be, and without it, we're not formed, we're not changed, and it is a part of that changing process. But no one desires suffering, but we should embrace suffering because God only permits the suffering that A, he knows we can handle, and B, he knows he can turn into good for us.
Okay, well, I'm not going to keep you too much longer because you've got other stuff to do, and I've got my youngest son has decided to, yes. I hear the clicking of Xbox things.
Is it Fortnite time or is it FIFA time?
What are you on? Fortnite. He's on Fortnite, and the pups are getting up and getting ready to be fed by mum. But can we get
a live puppy update on Fox and Father?
Oh my God, a live puppy update. Hang on.
Yeah. Oh, there they are. Where's Blaze 2.0?
Blaze 2.0 has been renamed. Oh, big news. Big news. If you'd been keeping up with the pup dates, you'd know this.
Sadiq is transsexual.
Sadiq has been renamed Narinda. Blaze 2.0 has a new name, which is Apollo, because his dad is called Rocky. So Eugene, in his great wisdom, has called Blaze 2.0 Apollo now. And I think we have homes for them all, which is sad. Oh. But there might be one that we don't have a home for. But Apollo is going to go with Eugene, and he's going to be with him at all times. So that makes me full of joy, because it's nothing to give. Especially Eugene's like a horse whisperer with dogs. He's so good with dogs, so it's going to make me happy to do all that. But I think they're kind of all taken, maybe bar one, but Lizzie's got her eyes on the other one, and they're all sweet, and I'm sort of managing that and doing that, but it's sort of kind of simple. So what's so next week you're in Alabama?
I am, yep. I'm in Texas until this Saturday, and then I'll go off to Alabama. I'm probably going to meet up with your mate Larry, see what's going on down there. But I'm going to stay with the church. I've got a speaking engagement. I'm doing a preaching thing as well. But for the most part, I'm just hanging out in Alabama because I love it down there.
You should definitely try and stay over with Larry if you can, and go and sit on the dock of the bay, literally, with an AR-15.
Yes.
Fill up some, what we did was fill up Gatorade bottles and shoot them from the dock back into the hillside. And it was amazing. Just the sound of a 223 round echoing across a lake is the sound of freedom.
I love it. And what are you doing? Are you still on half term then?
We're still on half term. Teach is going to go to, is back to school next week. I am trying to sort this house out. I will be, I'm working hard on this pledge thing, because the candidates list have to be announced by next Friday. So we'll probably come out on Wednesday and say, hey, Tories, do you want to deal with the culture? Or are we going to talk about, tax and spend and all the stuff that you failed on? Because actually my view has always been and will remain to be that every single policy decision comes out of the culture. Everything is cultural. So we'll see if any of them take it up. If they don't take it up, they deserve to be to lose to Labour. And if they do take it up, then they deserve to a chance to be elected. But my view is that why would you stand a candidate against someone like Andrea Jenkins? I just don't understand. Why?
I'm struggling because there are Conservative MPs that I know and love. But I don't think I could vote for any of them right now. Their party has been in power for 14 years. What have they done? What have they accomplished? What have they changed? And it's all right for them to say, well, I wasn't the leader, but they're all part of this party. They're all part of government. And well, their party is government. I struggle. I think that the party needs to be demolished. And I'm not for Conservatives having zero seats.
Okay, well, that's, again, a very fence-sitting position that you've adopted.
Because otherwise, how are they going to change?
Well, I think they need to suffer, but I also think that if a big lump of them, led by, I don't know, a Suella Braverman or someone who was brave, turned up and said, we have a cultural crisis going on here. If they stood up and actually took, the great thing is, I imagine none of them will take this offer, because they'll be told by CCHQ that they can't, and then I think, well, then you do deserve zero seats. you're heading to zero seats. But I just don't like what replaces it, which is a Labour supermajority. And, you know, and I mean, at least the Labour, we don't have to then deal with Rishi Sunak. You're going to have to go and die in a foreign war, you know, defending Zelensky's coke habit. But, you know, it does seem so topsy-turvy. But so, you know, I suppose we just pray for the present.
Yeah, well, especially, I mean, I'm trying to keep an eye on British politics while I'm here, but I'm just seeing Rishi Sunak saying things like, we're going to bring in national service. And I'm like, Rishi, you've had 14 years. You haven't brought in national service. The one thing you conservatives are proud of is gay marriage, which isn't conservative policy. You've done absolutely nothing for people. You made the country worse. Every year you said you're going to cut control or cap immigration. Immigration skyrocketed. Our capital city is no longer British. And what it is full of crime, knife crime and theft and big brother state, cameras everywhere, ULEZ, this and that. We're being taxed to death. We've got inflation. They're saying inflation's back to normal. No, inflation is not normal. Cost of living crisis, obsession with net zero. They all need to go. But the thing is, for so long, they've had us voting for them out of fear of a Labour government. And I'm no longer going to vote for the Conservatives out of fear of Labour, because Labour are getting in anyway. Things are going to get worse, but perhaps we all need to go through a bit of suffering, including the Tories, because the suffering will hopefully help them find their ideology again. They can come back in 5 or 10 years' time and say, we got it wrong, we weren't conservative, now we're ready to be conservative. Or who knows, perhaps maybe there'll be a different party in, that we can vote for by then that will be actually right-wing and help. But then again, maybe none of it will happen because we can't rely on politics.
Or a movement which isn't a party that tells people who to vote for. So maybe you get 10 million people in a movement. I'm just trying to find this email that I got this morning. My first email that I woke up to this morning said that we're increasing your residence parking permit prices to tackle climate change. I was just like, at what point are the people going to realise that you can't just say we're charging you more for the same thing because of the climate? Anyway, help us end on a positive note, Calvo.
The positive note is that it doesn't matter. None of it matters, because as much of it, we cling on to what we've known. Our eyes are set on the eternal life to come, not on the here and now.
So what's our hopeful message towards you?
Our hopeful message is that it doesn't really matter. Yes, we have to partake in the here and now. We have to be in the world, but not of the world. But our eyes are not set on the here and now. Our eyes are set in the world to come. We are travelers. We are sojourners in this earthly realm. And this is not our final destination. So we can't be too hung up on the pitfalls of politics or culture or society. We can work to change them. But even if we don't have any impact in the here and now, it doesn't really matter, because this is not where we're meant to be. This is not home. This is not our home.
Oh, man, Calvo, he's so good at wrapping these things up. Anyway, I can't wait to sit and have an actual cigar with you again. I'm so glad that you're in America and you didn't get destroyed by a tornado or something. I really hope you spend the night. Go and spend a night with Larry if you can, and his amazing family, because they are really, really lovely people. And we can expect you back for a Fox and Father shortly. And, you know, I'm very concerned about these ever-extending American trips, Carl.
Oh, shush. Go play some Fortnite with Eugene.
All right, love that.
You too. See you soon, brother. Bye-bye.